You know that babies are being aborted every day, but do you know what happens to their bodies? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome again to our program. Each week we bring you these programs from the studios of Life Dynamics in Denton, Texas. And as always, it's a pleasure to have our friend, the president and founder of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher, as our guest today. Mark, good to be with you.
Thank you, sir. Nice to be back again.
And, of course, Janet, our associate director, is here. Let's talk about the bodies of these babies that are aborted. As we know, and we were just talking before we started taping, the stories over the years, over the decades of pro-life activists finding the dumpsters with the bodies buried in them. And I always remember that incident from Los Angeles back in the mid-'80s. A dumpster with 16,500 aborted babies in it. Mm-hmm. Other times, of course, we have on our website some of the photos of these bodies that pro-lifers in Chicago and Milwaukee discovered in the trash bins, and right. Others are just ground up or flushed down the toilet. I mean, these are human bodies that people often don't think. What happens to these babies after they're aborted?
That's right. I mean, there was an abortion mill that went out of business, and some pro-life people bought the property and used it for a crisis pregnancy center. But there in the sink, in what was the procedure room, was caked blood, human blood, all in the garbage disposal. So we know for a fact, this is not just something by rumor, evidence that would grind them up in the garbage disposal.
And, of course, on a number of opportunities, we've had the privilege of burying the bodies of aborted babies that have been rescued. But Mark, some years ago, you uncovered another manner in which these bodies are used. And let's review that again for those that maybe haven't heard about it.
Well, I think what the abortion industry figured out one time was they were making a lot of profit off women killing the baby. But then they were throwing away some of the most profitable part. The body could be actually used to make additional financial profit. We were approached by someone who worked for an organization that actually chopped up parts inside the abortion clinics and then sold those parts to medical researchers and biotech companies and research universities and so forth. And the amount of money that can be made from this, and is still being made from it today, is astronomical. Well, we saw circumstances where they might charge a woman $300 to kill her baby and then sell that baby for $2,500 chopped up into parts. The eyes will bring so much, the heart will bring this much, the liver, the skin, whatever they can get retrieved from the baby once they've killed it. So it was an additional profit area for them and a very profitable one. I always said if they had any business sense to them, they'd offer free abortions. They could do a free abortion and still make a lot of money just off the parts. Mm-hmm.
And they had a clever way, of course, of getting around the laws that tell us how
federal law prohibits the sale of human body parts. However, there was a loophole created in this law in which parts could be donated, but then you could pay the donor what's called a reasonable amount for the retrieval and the shipping and so forth. But the problem there is the donor is the one who gets to decide what a reasonable amount is. So if I might say to you, I'll sell you a pair of eyes out of an unborn baby for $150, and you say, well, you can't sell them to me because that violates federal law. Okay, well, I'll give them to you, but I'm going to charge you $150 to retrieve them and ship them. Mm-hmm. And so it's a clever way they figured to get around it, and they're still doing it to this day. They're still getting around this law, and Congress is totally unwilling to do anything about it, and we saw that firsthand.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that, some of those obstacles that got in the way. But you remember the first time you saw the list of the shipping list?
I couldn't believe it. And yeah. I know when Mark first showed it to me, when they uncovered this, I said, this can't be. I mean, it looked like a menu, you know, when you're going to order some parts for things, you know, any kind of electronic appliance. I mean, it was just listed. It was on and on and on.
And what I go back every once in a while and look at the shipping forms, you know,
right.
And then you see at the top, you know, half a brain,
right.
You know, prenatal eyes, kidney, liver,
right.
Pelvis. Let's just zero in on this for a minute. Here you've got you've got this trafficking going on in these body parts. And on the form, they're explaining what the part is, ship on wet ice, you know, right. FedEx account number. But one thing I want to point out here, too, is on a number of these forms, it was indicated explicitly no abnormalities.
Right, right.
Explain to us the significance of that.
And, of course, the abortion industry always claims that late-term abortions are only done when the baby couldn't survive, the mother's going to die, or whatever it might be. These forms put the lie to that. They'll say, you know, we need eyes from babies 28 weeks and older. That's a third trimester late-term abortion. No abnormalities. Right. The other thing that's really chilling about that is you can look at some of those forms, and it'll say, here's how we need the parts chopped up and delivered to us. They have to be cut a certain way. They have to be on what's called DMEM, which is a nutrient that they ship them in so they remain fresh, and then put them on dry ice. And they'll say things like, must be on DMEM and DMEN and dry ice within 10 minutes of fetal demise. Father Pavone, that means that baby has to be taken out alive. You cannot cause the fetal demise inside the woman's uterus and then extract the baby and cut it up the way they say to cut it up and do it in 10 minutes. So that baby has to be taken out alive in order to have this done. And our infiltrator, and we've talked to other people who've been involved in this as well, confirmed that it was often the case. He was brought babies that were still alive.
So this person who's getting the site fee for obtaining the parts and shipping them off is literally there at the site before the abortion.
Oh, yeah.
Even takes place, waiting, ready to bring those.
Well, the system was that they would receive a fax every morning from the home office in Maryland saying, here are the parts that we need today, or here's what our researchers have said they need. We need 12 sets of eyes. We need 15 leg bones. We need, you know, six brains, whatever it is they're ordering. Then they would look at the patient. He'd get that list in, give that to the abortionist and say, we need to match this up. How many patients do we have that are 16 weeks or further along? We need the eyes out of those babies. How many babies do we have that are 28 weeks and further along? We need the skin off of those babies. The other thing that was interesting, they would often buy the blood of the babies. And both infiltrators that we had who talked to us about this said that meant you had to take the baby out intact, because obviously if you cause a puncture in the skin somewhere along the way inside the woman, then that blood's going to be lost. And it's also the field is going to be contaminated. Yeah. So when you see those things that say we're buying cord blood, that means that baby was taken out intact.
Now, in any of the evidence that came out, did you find any indication that the woman having the abortion knew that her baby's body was going to be sold in this way?
There are some. I mean, we knew that some of these women do donate knowingly. But we also discovered evidence that a very high percentage of them don't. And the reality is, Father Pavone, just like in medical malpractice and in the issue of women being raped in abortion clinics, the stigma that's attached to abortion protects them in the baby parts thing, too. Because even if they take the parts from a woman, if she's on the table and she has an abortion, what does she know? Or be honest with you, what does she care what happens
what
to
does
the
she care?
That's
parts? Right. Yeah.
And if they go off and sell those parts or just grind them up in the garbage disposal and send them down the sewer, she doesn't know any different. And she's never going to come forward and say, I suspect that they sold my baby parts, because she didn't want anybody to know she had an abortion. Mm-hmm. So it's the stigma and the secrecy of abortion that protects these people, just like it does, again, in the malpractice area, in the area of women being raped at abortion clinics, which we've documented is very common.
You know, you didn't hear a peep about this on the news,
obviously,
of course. But yet, you know, periodically on the news, what we hear is that frozen cadavers, human bodies, are being sold, which is you're not supposed to do. They're donated for science.
Right.
And there's a big outcry in the media. Look at this scandal. Look what's going on. Isn't it ironic that that's a big, you know, shameful thing? And this, they refuse. It's like silence. They won't even report it.
Well, there's several dynamics going on there, I believe. First off, it's related to the fact that this culture now is so self-centered. Right. When you talk to them about babies being butchered in abortion mills and chopped up, the public does not perceive that as something that could affect them personally. They're already born, right? They're not in the abortion mill.
Right.
With these other situations, like where you have pathologists or funeral homes chopping up parts off of adults and selling them, The everybody perceives, oh, that could be me, or that could be my spouse, or whoever.
My grandma or somebody.
So because it affects them personally, and this is such an inwardly turned culture now, And we only care, it seems, about things that affect us directly. We don't care about our brothers and sisters over here who may be undergoing, you know, Lord knows what kind of horrible situation. Because of that, we don't care about the unborn, but we do care about the born. Yeah. The other thing is, I think people like the idea, while they would never admit it, they like the idea that this is going on because in their mind it gives them some justification for the horror of abortion. And I've had them say this to me. Oh, I'm horrified by abortion. I think this is a terrible thing. However, at least something's good coming out of it if we're selling the parts to cure AIDS or Parkinson's or whatever.
Utilitarian right. kind of morality.
Yeah. Right.
I think two big questions that viewers probably have in their minds right now is, number one, how was this uncovered? And number two, to trace for them again the connection here between the abortion mill, the people doing the transactions, and who's receiving these parts and for what purpose?
Right. Okay. The way this works is you'll have a company that is in the business of selling. They're basically what I call a wholesaler. They buy the parts from the abortion mill, and then they sell them to a research organization or a university or a pharmaceutical company or a biotech company. This company, this entity, one of the ones we found was a company called Opening Lines, and there was another company called Anatomic Gift Foundation. They will put what's called a retrieval agent inside an abortion clinic. They will pay the abortion clinic for that person to be in there. And then, like I said, they take the fax orders in the morning. They know what parts they're looking for. They tell the abortionist. He brings them the babies that will match up to the parts that they need, and they ship them out to the end user. The end user pays the middleman. The middleman pays the abortion clinic. That's the way the system works, and they get around the law again by saying, we're not selling the parts, we're just retrieving our cost of doing this, but we get to determine what the cost is.
Now, the information on this whole baby parts scandal is on your website, right?
Yes, right. You can go to lifedynamics.com, and they can look at the information there. And I'm looking at putting out another piece now to keep this in front of the American people,
yeah.
Some physical documentation. Like I said, they put out brochures. They actually had brochures, one that they used to recruit abortion clinics to get into the system, and then another one that the abortion clinics could use to hand to their customers to talk them into it. So it was a very business-like arrangement. It's just a standard business model that you might see in any legitimate business. The only difference is this one is selling the parts of children butchered in these abortion clinics.
And this was uncovered by means of infiltration.
Yes, we do a lot of undercover work and infiltration, most people know about only one of the infiltrators that we had, but we actually had more than one. Mm-hmm. We were able to recruit some other people that were inside the industry. And I want to make it clear, people have criticized us saying, well, how can you send pro-life people to work inside an abortion clinic? We have never once used a pro-life person, nor will we ever use a pro-life person to do that. These are all pro-aborts who either become disgusted at what they're doing, which was the case here, or disgusted at what they're seeing and want to do something about it, or sometimes they do it just strictly for vengeance. They get in a fight with somebody at the abortion clinic or the owner, they get fired, and they'll come out and give us information just from that reason.
And some people have asked us about this in the sense of they saying, well, how can you trust the pro-abort people? And I say,
right.
Well, we don't.
You don't.
That's
you verify it with the concrete evidence that
right.
they can produce.
That's right. And like I said, we came out with parts list, with the daily faxes that they get asking for parts, with the price list, the brochures, and so forth. If all we had been able to uncover was a pro-abort telling us this was going on, we'd have never made it public.
Exactly.
The infiltrators, people have to understand, they're like bird dogs. They tell you where to dig.
Right.
But you don't take their word for anything.
Exactly.
Right.
You know what? People watch around and say, okay, we're going to go to Life Dynamics website. We're going to see this for ourselves. But then they're probably going to be outraged. What do you think should be the next steps? Like, what was someone who's watching this right now, goes to your website, really sees for themselves this information, what should they do with it?
Well, Janet, when you talk about what we can do about this, we've got a real problem here. When we tried to get something done about it through our elected official, through Congress, what we discovered was there was a problem in that the Democratic Party is in bed with the people who are selling the parts, the abortion clinics.
Right.
The Republicans are in bed with the people who are buying the parts, the pharmaceutical companies, the biotech companies, and so forth. So both of them have a vested interest in seeing this system continue, and neither one of them have the moral will to do anything about it. They don't even want to do anything about it. So that's the biggest problem that we have. I think then in the public arena, one of the problems we have is that the American people have this, I think, kind of subtle desire to see this continue, because in their mind, it sort of gives a justification for abortion. They can say, well, I'm uncomfortable with abortion. I don't like abortion. But if something good can come of it, we can cure Alzheimer's by butchering up these babies, then maybe something good can come of it. And, you know, I've always made the analogy here. It is absolutely, and people go ballistic when you say this, but it's absolutely no different than the Nazis stealing the gold out of teeth of the Jews that they were killing in the death camps and saying, we can use that gold to educate children and to do these all these wondrous things over here we're going to do with this gold. Mm-hmm. We would no more buy that than the man in the moon. And yet we buy it with our own Holocaust. We buy it in the trafficking of body parts. We say this gives some justification to what we're doing.
So the bottom line is that, you know, we ask, how can we stop the selling of body parts? This is it's a bitter, poisonous fruit of abortion itself.
Absolutely. And that's the point. We're going to have these brush fires like this, Father Pavone, for as long as we have legal abortion. It'll be body parts today. It'll be partial birth abortion tomorrow. It'll be this the next day and this, you know, 10 years down the road. You cannot do a wrong thing rightly. And so you're always going to have these brush fires as long as you have legal abortion. So when you say, what can we do about this? The only ultimate answer is to work toward a system where we do not allow unborn children to be killed for any reason. Then we won't have to worry about these things.
And then, and this is why, you know, we enjoy so much our collaboration, and it's going to only increase as time goes on, because I always tell people, you know, educationally, pedagogically, you got to lead people from what's more obvious to what's less obvious. And there's plenty of people out there, including viewing this program right now, who will say, well, why should we stop abortion? Why do we have to end abortion? And yet when they look at baby body parts, they say, well, this shouldn't be happening. And so you lead people from the more gruesome or the more obvious or the more upsetting things back to, not just to stay there and be upset, but back to the underlying problem. We've got to end the killing. We've got to restore the status of this unborn child.
Let me point out something real quickly. If you're upset by the body parts thing, but you're not upset by abortion itself, there's something wrong with you. Because if there's nothing wrong with abortion, then what's wrong with chopping up the parts and selling them?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, thanks for all you've done to uncover this, and for all you do with Life Dynamics. And Janet, thank you also for your work in this arena. Mm-hmm. And thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us on Gospel of Life. When you hear these things, you now have a special obligation to pass them along. Speak to your pastor about this. Go to the Life Dynamics website. Talk to your pro-life groups. You publish a newsletter, put this information in the newsletter. You do an email blast, tell them to go to the website and look at this information for themselves. We've got to sound the alarm and not be afraid. Even if it's going to get people upset, we need a little bit of upsetment in order to set right this greatest injustice of our times, the killing of our unborn brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining us for this segment. Now stay with us and we'll have our action segment so you can learn even more things you can do.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I worried about staying in school.
I was already struggling to care for one child.
My parents told me I wasn't ready to be a mom, so I had an abortion.
I had physical problems afterwards.
I went from relationship to relationship.
I hated myself.
I started to have nightmares.
I cried when I saw a pregnant woman.
I tried to commit suicide.
Couldn't bond with the child I later had.
I tried to numb my pain with alcohol.
I struggled with depression.
I had trouble conceiving again.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
Each of us thought we were the only ones struggling afterward.
Now we realize many women regret their choice.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Do you realize that every 23 seconds a baby is killed by legal abortion in this country? But you know, you can do something to save those lives. At Gospel Life Ministries, we have a bulletin insert called You Can Save Someone's Life Today, and we make this available absolutely free for your church. And it doesn't matter how many bulletins you print. Suppose you print 1,000, 2,000, we'll send it to you free. And in this insert, You Can Save Someone's Life Today are the resources that you need to reach out and help a girl. Suppose you hear of a girl who's pregnant and in need. We have the hotline numbers where that girl can receive help right in her own community. And we're talking about medical expenses paid, a place to live if necessary, job opportunities. She doesn't have to feel feel that her only way is to go to an abortion mill. And also, if you know someone who is hurting from an abortion, we want to bring them back to the healing and mercy of the Lord Jesus Christ. And in this bulletin insert are the ministries there, toll-free numbers that are waiting in open arms to receive her back to help and healing. And in addition, you can inform your church community about facts about abortion. And then finally, you can get involved. You can help us and join hands in saving those lives, because in this bulletin insert are action items so that everybody can help save a life today. Thank you. Call us at our toll-free number.
Prayer is essential to everything we do as Christians. The Lord Jesus said, "Without me, you can do nothing." That's why we at Gospel of Life have launched a national prayer campaign to end abortion. We've composed a simple prayer that you can say each and every day. And that prayer is available at prayercampaign.org on the internet. You can say this prayer with your family. You can bring it to your pastor. Some pastors, in fact, have placed this prayer in the church bulletin or on the inside of their parish hymnals. In whatever way you can promote this prayer, you'll be adding more and more believers to this great campaign to ask the Lord to bring an end to abortion in America and to commit ourselves to do what He wants us to do to achieve that goal. Join the National Prayer Campaign to End Abortion at prayercampaign.org. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank. Gospel of Life Ministries, Priests for Life, and the National Pro-Life Action Center are ready, willing, and able to come to your church, conference, convention, prayer group, Sunday school, or pro-life event. Dynamic, seasoned, and experienced speakers, teachers, and presenters are available. Renowned leaders such as Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life, and President of the National Pro-Life Religious Council. Dr. Alveda King, the niece of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Janet Morana, Associate Director of Priests for Life and co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, together with pastoral associates Dr. Teresa Burke, the founder of Rachel's Vineyard, and her husband Kevin Burke, counselor and social worker, Jim Pinto, pro-life pioneer, and our clergy, Reverend Dennis Wild, Reverend Peter West, and Reverend Walter Quinn, are prepared to preach and teach in your church about how to end the tragedy of abortion, minister to those suffering from abortion, help train and organize your pro-life group, lead retreats, and much, much more. To schedule a speaker in your area, call the Speakers Bureau at 888-735-3448, extension 258, or email us at speakers@gospeloflife.com. The waiting is over. The time for action is now. Schedule an inspiring speaker for your area.
Welcome to our action segment. Janet, one of the things we want to ask our viewers to do is to contact their elected representatives in the United States Congress and also on the state level to encourage them and to urge them to promote pro-life legislation.
That's right, because, you know, just recently in the elections, we had great victories for moral values. Christians showed up at the voting booth. But now that they showed up and voted, we just don't want them to sit around till the next election. We want them actively engaged in communicating with the representatives.
And the representatives themselves tell us how important and valuable that communication is. And we're going to share with our viewers a clip now from Congressman Chris Smith, one of the great pro-life heroes in the United States Congress. And let's listen to what he has to say about the importance of lobbying.
Contacting people in their district offices is very often overlooked by advocacy groups. You know, they feel like, I got to go to Washington or I have to send my fax to Washington. Well, that works. But when you get, you make your contact in the home district, it says to the individual, these are my locals. This isn't some national organization contacting me. These are people who came into my office or wrote me in my office at home. And I think it has an even greater impact on the individual congressman or senator.
Right, because sure, if you're saying it's a home office, that means they live in your district, which right. means they're eligible to either vote you in or vote you out of office next time.
Let me also, it also tells the individual office holder, they know where your home office is. Everyone knows Washington, U.S. Capitol. You can send something to the Capitol and it gets right. to the individual. To know where the different district offices is shows a slightly higher level of sophistication. When you do a very well-written and particularly if you have a presentation, you know, lay it out in good, solid detail, that can persuade people. You know, I think a lot of people don't understand how important persuasion is. It's not just numbers, that's important, and the volume of contact, you know, 200 or 300 letters or faxes that come in on a particular issue have an impact. But if you take the time to meet with the individuals, you know, we're not difficult to approach. Right. And even if you get to meet with staff because the member has some
appointments
and can't make it, staff have a very, very high degree of influence on their individual member. And if they think, you know, if you stray or go in the opposite direction, there may be a penalty, they may stay on the straight and narrow and vote the right way. You know, the one thing that politicians, all politicians understand, are penalties. Will this hurt me in my next election?
Right.
So I think volume of contact, quality of contact, frequency, like I said, volume being the number, all of those things taken together can make a big difference.
Well, we're very grateful to Congressman Smith for sharing that with us. You know, some people underestimate the importance of a phone call, a letter, a fax, or a visit. But sometimes they'll visit and they'll say, oh, I just got to meet with the staff. Well, the staff are the ones who are studying the issues and making recommendations to the legislators. It's very important. And they count all these phone calls and letters.
That's right. And very often when you do show up and if you do get to meet with a staffer, you should ask who handles the abortion issue on this congressman's staff or this senator's staff, because then you'll be targeting the right person. And it's very often, you know, you got to remember, first of all, the staffers have that congressman or senator's ear all the time. And because they're so busy, they rely on that staffer to funnel information to them. So never be discouraged if you go to, and I also encourage you to go to their local office. It's easier for you to get to than Washington. Your local office is really paid more attention to than what happens in Washington. The reason being is they realize this is someone who voted me into office. They live in my home district, and they're going to pay more attention.
Well, also, when we're talking about the big moral issues of the day, it does make more of an impact when those calls come into the local office, because usually a lot of times they're dealing with, most of the time, local phenomena. But when it's a big national issue and the local office gets calls, they tell the people in Washington and they talk about it.
That's right. So we need our Christians to not just get involved on Election Day, but stay involved throughout the year.
Well, thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us. Please support Gospel of Life with your contributions. We rely on the support of people like you. And we thank our friends at Life Dynamics for making this taping possible. Tell your friends about this program. Join us next week on Gospel of Life. And let's pray for one another.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank, and I hope you've been encouraged and challenged today. If you and others you know, perhaps a prayer group, Bible study, Sunday school, or pro-life group, want to know more about Gospel of Life and how people of faith united together can build the culture of life, call us at 888-735-3448. Visit us on the web at www.gospeloflife.com or email us at info@gospeloflife.com. You can write to us at Gospel of Life, P.O. Box 60038, Staten Island, New York, 10306.